The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be back with you on this chilly day for us here at Edstone. Pretty cold day. It's been cold for the last couple of weeks. Up here in the attic of Edstone, we've moved our space heater. It's a fairly good-sized studio, a fair bit bigger than the studio down in the cellar, and so it can get chilly. But we've moved our space heater from one wall outlet, one electrical outlet, to the next, drawing a little bit closer to the back of my legs where it is today. So it's nice and toasty right here around the podium where I'm speaking. Lots to get to on today's program. First, just a note about the video from my father over the weekend, Trump versus Macron in Bible prophecy. Almost 16,000 views now for that video that's been up just for a few days. And the one we posted here in Britain has all, it's, of course, it's on YouTube worldwide, but the one that played here in Britain, what is prophesied for Britain, that has over 3,000 views. So we've gotten a pretty good response to that one as well, particularly when you take into account the calls that came in on Saturday and Sunday morning. I think over 100 calls total, and then the text messages to go with it. So some good programs to catch up on if you haven't seen those yet. They're at thetrumpet.com. Well, speaking of the trumpet, my father wrote just a few months ago, he said about the importance of history, particularly with respect to the Holy Roman Empire, and how that we need to know this history and also understand Bible prophecy, or else we're not going to be aware of what's happening in these very last days. He wrote, most are blinded and lack true understanding on both of these vital sources. That would be history and prophecy. Having a good grasp of the Holy Roman Empire and what is happening in Europe today is vital if you are going to be prepared for what is coming in the near future. And of course, when you watch his program, for example, the latest one on Trump versus Macron, that's why that's so significant. And it is, as I said on yesterday's show, it's something that really doesn't get much attention. It didn't get nearly enough attention as it should have. And that's something that you're just seeing every day in the news cycle. The stories that should be getting a lot of attention are ignored. And then the ones that really, they're really not that significant at all, they're just obsessed with, particularly in the United States. And we'll draw attention to that a time or two here today as we proceed. First, I just want to mention Richard Palmer's trumpet brief from yesterday. Welcome to the new German history. We've gone through some of this material, these publications, these far-right publications in Germany, but it's becoming more mainstream, this idea that, well, Germany's not really to blame for starting World Wars I and II. It's America's fault. It's Wall Street's fault. Or it's that evil British Empire, colonialism, bad. That's very bad. That's what caused it all. Richard refers to this survey, the University of Leipzig, surveying 2,400 Germans on their attitudes toward authoritarianism. They ask statements like, in the national interest, under certain circumstances, a dictatorship is the better form of government. What do you think about a statement like that? They asked these people, these Germans. They asked, without the extermination of the Jews, Hitler would today be regarded as a great statesman. Is that true? Would you agree with something like that? What about this? The Jews, more than any other people, use evil tricks to achieve what they want. Now, as Richard brings out in the trumpet brief, that study found that about 10%, a relatively low number, mostly or completely agree with these kinds of statements. 10%. But then there's another 20% that said that they partly agree and perhaps partly disagree. So 30% or so that can hear those statements and think, well, yeah, I mean, I agree with some of that. I agree with a lot of that. Richard writes, but some of the biggest surprises came on questions about Germany's role in the world. One such statement was, we should finally have the courage to have a strong national feeling again. Germany rising again. We should have the courage to do that. Richard says about 37% said that they completely or mostly agreed. Another 30% partly agreed, partly didn't. He says the statement, what our country needs today is a hard and energetic enforcement of German interests vis-a-vis foreign countries. And that got similar results. As I say, we've gone through some of that on this program over the last couple of weeks, that material that Richard's been compiling in recent weeks. Well, more recently, this is just from the Times of London. From today, it says German public support for an increase to defense spending has risen sharply over the past year amid concerns that the country can no longer depend on the U.S. for protection. So this is something, this is not news to you if you've been following this program. You're seeing it from my father's recent Key of David. You're hearing it a lot on this show. You're seeing it at the Trumpet magazine. The fact that European nations, powerful European nations, are saying that they can no longer depend on the U.S. for protection. So what should we do? What do the German people think should be done? It says a poll published yesterday by the Körber Foundation, a think tank, found that 43% of Germans believed that the defense budget should be bolstered, up from 32% last year. This is just in the past year. So you think about some of the stories that most people ignore. The American media, for example. Well, one thing they're not ignoring here in Europe is what America is saying about its leader. Just this constant attack against Donald Trump. And so over here, they see Trump as the problem. They see President Trump as the threat. Now, it is true that, as we've noted, President Trump has called them out for the unfair trade practices. He's called them out for not paying their fair share to NATO, and they don't like it. They don't like it. In 1 year's time, it's gone from 32% to 43%. The everyday average ordinary German saying that we need to put more into our defense. We need to pay more, not for NATO, but for our own German defense, our own European army. And this is something that's not just coming from think tanks anymore, this call to arms. It's coming from the French leader. It's coming from the German leader. And you see that these kinds of statements coming from those leaders, they have quite a lot of support. It says, listen to this, the Körber Foundation report indicates a growing sense that Germany will need a stronger military as America becomes more of an unknown quantity. More than a quarter of the respondents said that Germany's troubled relationship with the country, that's America, Germany's troubled relationship with America was one of its most serious foreign policy challenges. Behind immigration. So you've got the immigration crisis, and then you've got the troubling relationship with the United States. You see where this is headed? You see where this is taking us into a very dangerous period in human history? Fits right in with so many prophecies. Like my father said back in the October issue of the Trumpet, as I quoted at the start, you cannot truly understand the Holy Roman Empire unless you understand history and the Bible. If you know some history, if you understand Bible prophecy, then you look at some of these things and say, wait a second, immigration, we know that's a crisis, but do you mean Germany actually sees its troubled relationship with the United States as right up there with the immigration crisis? Well, judging by this poll, that's what's happening. This is the trend line. It says only 35% of Germans said that the U.S. was one of their most important partners, down from 43% just last year. So it's gone down almost 10%. Germans who say the U.S. Is their most important partner. And in the other direction, it's gone up almost 10%. Germans who are saying, we need to build an army. We need to pay for an army. Now, as I say, if you understand history and prophecy, well, these would be some pretty disturbing developments. The Jerusalem Post had a piece today about another disturbing poll. This high prevalence of anti-Semitic attitudes in and around Europe. It says, in addition, high numbers of Europeans blame anti-Semitism on Jews. They blame it on the Jews. You know about the rising tide of anti-Semitism in Europe. What about the rising tide of Europeans who blame that on the Jews? Not on the persecutors. Not on the ones carrying out the acts of violence. They're saying the Jews, well, they have it coming. It's their fault. It says numerous Jewish leaders. Well, it just summarizes. Let me just back up. The high numbers of Europeans blame anti-Semitism on Jews, saying it is a reaction to how they behave. This is very similar. This is very similar to the way Hamas thinks. Hezbollah. Iran. Well, I mean, look at how they behave. They deserve it. They deserve to be persecuted. Does that sound familiar? Have we seen this before? Have we seen this happen before, even in our modern era? It goes on and says that there's a disturbingly high number of young Europeans that have never heard of the Holocaust. Numerous Jewish leaders around the world expressed deep concern over the findings of this poll. And it goes on and says how that it underlines the importance of Holocaust education and government action to combat anti-Semitism. And then listen to this. The results emerged from a comprehensive poll conducted by CNN. And then another group, ComRes, which sampled 7,000 Europeans from Austria, France, Germany, the UK, Hungary, Poland, and Sweden. Now, I'm not in the US right now, so I don't watch CNN, but I do see some of the clips, and obviously they've got a website that I visit, not too often, I guess. But I don't think I'm going out on a limb too far to suggest that even though CNN conducted this poll, this is not a top story. This is not something that the talking heads, the pundits, are really sounding the alarm over. Look, there's this rising tide of anti-Semitism, but what about this growing percentage that says that it's the Jews' fault? What about? What about the ignorance regarding the Holocaust? Is CNN deeply, deeply concerned? Certainly not as concerned as it is about Donald Trump and everything that the Trump administration is doing. It says, according to the poll, approximately 33% of those surveyed said Jews were too influential in political affairs around the world. This is just the European sentiment. More than 25% of Poles and Hungarians said that they had too much influence in the media. The Jews. They're influencing the media too much. It says a third of Austrians said Jews have too much influence over financial matters. A third of Austrians. 25% of the French and Germans, they agree with the Austrians. And then it says that at the same time, almost a fifth of Europeans, some 18%, blame anti-Semitism in their respective countries on Jewish behavior, while 33% said they believe that Jews use the Holocaust to advance their own positions or goals. Now, why do we see this kind of ignorance? Well, it talks about just how young people, young adults, 18 to 34, something like 20% that have never even heard of the Holocaust. Those that have say, well, they used the Holocaust to advance their own positions or goals. And then the younger ones say, Holocaust? What's the Holocaust? Well, they're not being taught about the Holocaust, obviously. And you can blame the educators for that. You can blame the people in positions of power and authority for that. You can blame parents for that. There's a lot of ignorance, and it's not just with the young people. It's the educators who are blotting out this history. On Saturday, there was a story in the Washington Post. They actually reprinted a story from the Associated Press. It was about the Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, who labeled Israel a cancerous tumor. Not a particularly shocking article, because that's par for the course, right? That's what Iran says. That's what they say all the time. But here comes Rouhani. He says Israel's a cancerous tumor. And then the Associated Press, they put out a piece, and it's by this author that says that this statement is actually very rare for Rouhani. He's a moderate. This is unusual. He doesn't usually speak like this. And then listen to this article. Here's the lead. This is from Saturday, November 24th. Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, on Saturday called Israel a cancerous tumor established by Western countries to advance their interest in the Middle East. So they're illegitimate. They're a cancerous tumor. The West established them there to advance their interests. That's all. It says here, Iran's leaders frequently condemn Israel and predict its demise, but Rouhani, a relative moderate, rarely employs such rhetoric. So he draws a distinction, much like the Obama administration often did. Remember the echo chamber? Here's someone that's obviously been living in the echo chamber. Well, hey, we have Rouhani. He's the moderate. We can work with him. Now, his superiors, they often do condemn Israel and predict its demise, but now Rouhani, he's a moderate. It says here, addressing an annual Islamic Unity Conference on Saturday, Rouhani, this is from the article, the AP article, it says Rouhani said one of the ominous results of World War II was the formation of a cancerous tumor in the region. And then he went on to refer to Israel as a fake regime set up by Western countries. And then listen to this statement from the AP reporter. Iran supports militant groups like Hezbollah and Hamas that are pledged to Israel's destruction. Iran has never threatened to attack Israel, but has vowed to retaliate if it is attacked. That last statement, that's from a reporter at the Associated Press who said that Iran, the number one state sponsor of terror, Iran has never threatened to attack Israel. And the Washington Post saw that piece from the Associated Press and said, you know what? We need to print that in our paper. We need to get this message out. That's right. Iran has never threatened to attack Israel. It's pretty amazing. The Daily Wire said the utter ridiculousness of that claim was laid bare for all to see by Omri Sarin, the national security advisor to Senator Ted Cruz, who quoted Jeffrey Goldberg of the Atlantic, the left-wing Atlantic, in 2015, listing no less than 14 times a member of Iran's government swore his fealty to destroying the state of Israel starting in 2000. In other words, they say it all the time. They threaten to attack Israel all the time. Mohammad Khatami, the former president, he said, if we abide by real legal laws, we should mobilize the whole Islamic world for a sharp confrontation with the Zionist regime. If we abide by the Quran, all of us should mobilize to kill. We've got to kill the Zionist regime. We've got to wipe them off the map. I mean, that's what Rouhani was saying over the weekend. That's what he was saying. They're a cancerous tumor. What do you do with a cancerous tumor? You remove it. Ayatollah Khomeini, in 2001. It is the mission of the Islamic Republic of Iran to erase Israel from the map of the region. Mohammad Hassan Rahmanian, that's from 2010. He's one of Khomeini's representatives. Excuse me. He said, "We have manufactured missiles that allow us, when necessary, to replace Israel in its entirety with a big Holocaust." He knows about the Holocaust. He wants to see another one. A fifth of young people in the continent of Europe, they have no clue what the Holocaust even is. They have no idea what the Holocaust is. And here are Iranian leaders calling for another one. And even as they call for another Holocaust, you have a writer, a journalist, at the Associated Press, and then it's picked up by the Washington Post, who says that Iran has never threatened to attack Israel. Khomeini in 2014, this barbaric, wolf-like, and infanticidal regime of Israel, which spares no crime, has no cure but to be annihilated. Another leader, 2014, "Today we are aware of how the Zionist regime is slowly being erased from the world, and indeed, soon there will be no such thing as the Zionist regime on planet Earth." But that's not a threat. If you're to believe the Washington Post and the AP, that's not a threat. You can imagine some of the blowback that this publication, well, both of them, AP and Washington Post. The Washington Post did print a clarification over the weekend to the story, saying that the story should have made clear that Israeli officials view any such comments from Iran as existential threats. We don't. We certainly don't. But we should have been clearer there, that they have made statements that the Israeli officials interpret as threats. And so the paragraph in question now reads, "Iran supports militant groups like Hezbollah and Hamas that are pledged to Israel's destruction. Iran has never threatened to attack Israel, but has vowed to retaliate if it is attacked. Israel," this is the bit they added, "Israel views Iran as an existential threat." So here you have all of these documented cases, fact after fact after fact, statement after statement, over the course of 20 years, well, longer than that. This is what we intend to do. We've got to remove this cancer. We've got to remove it from off the map. And then here, even in its clarification, the Washington Post tells you, the reader, that Israel really is the problem here. Israel's the one that sees these as threats. We don't. Nobody else does. Just listen to what we're saying in our echo chamber. The only time Iran's ever said anything threatening is if they come up in defense of their nation. If they're attacked, in other words, then we will respond. But what is the truth? It's not just that young people are ignorant today because they're not getting this information, the truth, I mean, in school or wherever else. It's that they're being subjected to this constant barrage of lies. God says that truth fails in these last days. And so they're being lied to. It's not just a matter of not knowing it. They're being lied to on a daily basis. And you have so many examples of it, you can't cover them all. The Federalist, it had a piece the other day, again, about the Washington Post. The Post claims there's a surge in right-wing violence. There isn't. There's no evidence of a surge, either in historical context or as a matter of ideological preference, it says. But why should they let a lack of evidence get in the way of a good story that fits perfectly within their echo chamber? In their echo chamber, Donald Trump is Hitler, and his supporters are Nazis. And we're seeing a surge of right-wing violence, not in Germany or Europe or Iran or in Lebanon or in Gaza. It's in America. It's a surge a surge of right-wing violence. The Federalist says, according to the Washington Post, which relies on global terrorism database data, there were allegedly zero acts of right-wing terrorism in the entire nation in the year 2002. Since then, since 2002, we have seen a surge, they have that in quotes, to 36 acts of right-wing terrorism, so-called, in a nation of 325-plus million people by 2017. And among those acts, it says here there were 11 fatalities. It says, or, this is a Federalist now, in other words, fewer homicides were committed by political terrorists of any stripe in the United States in 2017 than were committed by illegal immigrants in the state of Texas alone, which I am assured is an incredibly low number that shouldn't worry us very much at all. If one of these is scaremongering, why not the other? Where is the actual surge of violence? That surge is coming across that southern border of the United States. And this is something that the media carefully work to conceal or to say it's not that bad. There's an occasional act of violence, but it's not that bad. But wait a minute, over here, right-wing violence. Did you know there's a surge? MSNBC had this report the other night. This was if you listen to the exchange here, you have the lead reporter or the gal in the studio in the comforts of her studio in New York or Washington or wherever. She's trying to lead on this reporter who's on the scene in Tijuana, where you have all of these so-called asylum seekers. And the reporter, I guess maybe he hasn't been coached enough like he needs to be before they send him out to the field. I imagine he's probably been called back to headquarters so that he can be schooled within the echo chamber first before going out on location. But listen to this reporter and how she tries to lead on the reporter in the field, and then she doesn't exactly get the answer that she's looking for. Here's clip one.
Some people look at these images, sure, and they listen to the president who says it's not women and children, it's stone-cold criminals. So my first question is, you're in that tent camp. Besides that family, give us the profile of who is there mostly and what are they looking for? Because it seems as though, to your point, they don't actually have the necessary information so they know how to cross the border. There could be people yesterday who were running because they thought it was their only chance.
Right. And it's very difficult because this has become such a polarizing issue. If we kind of take a walk, you'll be able to see for yourself. Again, this is the inner sanctum of the shelter. So you're going to see a lot of families here, a lot of women and children. But the truth is the majority of the people that are part of this caravan, especially outside, if we can make our way all the way over there, we'll show you the majority of them are men.
The truth is, he says there at the end, the majority of these people, especially those on the outside, let's go over here to the outside and take a look. The majority of these people are men. These are not families. For the most part, these are not families. There's a few sprinkled in here and there. But what is the majority? Well, you heard it. You heard it for yourself from someone who was right there on the ground. As I say, they'll have to bring him back to headquarters to give him some further training. I think it was the same network that had an exchange with one of the border security agents. And here again, listen to what the reporter has to say, and then hear for yourself what the border agent said about what happened on the border there with Tijuana on Sunday, clip two.
So at the outset of this interview, you took issue with the idea that these were people seeking asylum. The caravan, though, the 5,000 to 9,000, depending on which count you believe, that is in Tijuana right now, those are people coming to the border, as far as you know, for asylum, isn't it?
I do not believe that is true. I believe there are definitely people in that group that are going to try to claim asylum. The vast majority of those from the what we call the Northern Triangle are economic migrants, though. They do not meet the qualifications to get asylum here. They can still apply. That's a different issue. However, what I saw on the border yesterday was not people walking up to Border Patrol agents and asking to claim asylum. Matter of fact, one of the groups that I watched, one of the groups that actually several of them were arrested, they passed 10 or 15 marked Border Patrol units walking east to west, or west to east, I'm sorry. Numerous uniformed personnel as they were chanting, waving a Honduran flag, and throwing rocks at the agents. If they were truly asylum seekers, they would have just walked up with their hands up and surrendered, and that did not take place.
Right, and everybody saw the pictures from Sunday, the video, the rolling footage. These young men, for the most part, the majority, storming the border, climbing the walls, throwing rocks at border agents. And there's a border agent saying, look, if they were just truly seeking asylum, they'd come to us with their hands up saying, we need to be rescued. We're running from danger. Here, yet another case, yet another story where the media gets it flat out wrong. How many times did we hear leading up to Sunday, this is no invasion, there's nothing to worry about here. Jim Acosta, in that spectacular fail at the White House, the exchange with President Trump, he said, I'm here not to ask a question. I'm here to challenge you. I'm here to challenge you about this nonsense regarding the so-called invasion. It's not an invasion. They're not climbing walls. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. It's not a danger. And then all of America gets to see the spectacle on Sunday, with so many of them rightfully calling for more border security. As the Spectator said, now thousands of migrants from the caravan have arrived in the border city of Tijuana. Over the weekend, hundreds of them stormed a border crossing. That's what happened. Climbing the fence, throwing rocks. U.S. border agents used tear gas to repel the mob. You know, that exchange, that bit we just played for you. The report, even after the border agent said what he said, the reporter said, well, but now there have been reports that these people are seeking asylum, but they're just frustrated. They're not being processed fast enough. Any and every excuse you can think of to justify lawlessness in this case. And meanwhile, you've got all of these Iranian leaders calling for the destruction of Israel. And then a reporter at AP and the Washington Post providing cover for the number one state sponsor of terrorism, saying that they've never threatened Israel. Can you believe it? You think about that again. Truth is failing. And then just what gets ignored? What gets ignored? Speaking of Iran, they're now saying, I think it was Sunday or Monday as well, they're threatening Europe. The U.S. has already pulled out of the nuclear deal. Now Iran's saying to the European Union, look, if you don't back us up, this could be very ominous. That's a direct quote from Iran's Atomic Energy Organization. The situation would be unpredictable. You don't want to see Iran unpredictable now, Europe, do you? Here they are, threatening the West, threatening Europe in particular. The stage is being set for the Daniel 1140 clash. And all that you'll hear, still, even though it's weeks old by this point, is that the problem in the Middle East is Saudi Arabia. And that the U.S. needs to cut ties with Saudi Arabia because of the murder of Khashoggi. Mike Pompeo had a great piece in the Wall Street Journal. He's the secretary, what do you call him, the Secretary of Defense, is that right? Secretary of State, I believe. Something important. Sam will find it out for me. I just had a brain freeze there. But he wrote in the Wall Street Journal, the Trump administration's effort to rebuild the U.S.-Saudi Arabia partnership isn't popular in the salons of Washington, where politicians of both parties have long used the kingdom's human rights records to call for the alliance's downgrading. They want it downgraded, says the U.S. Secretary of State. And it's never happened because, well, Barack Obama, he downplayed this or that just like he did. He said it. He said the right things. So we'll give him a pass. You can read article after article from some sharp conservative writers talking about just the rank hypocrisy here. And Mr. Pompeo brings it out quite well in this Wall Street Journal piece. He says the kingdom is, well, he just talks about how important it is in the region. Okay, we're not going to condone what they did with this Khashoggi affair. That was a gruesome murder. There's no way around it. But if you step back and look at the bigger picture, it's a challenging situation. It's a rough neighborhood, the Middle East. And look at Iran. Look at what's happening. He says Saudi Arabia is working to secure Iraq's fragile democracy and to keep Baghdad tethered to the West's interests, not Tehran's. Riyadh is helping manage the food, or rather the flood of refugees fleeing Syria's civil war zone by working with host countries. Talks about the steps that it's taken in Yemen to, again, remove Iranian influence. It says, is it any coincidence that the people using the Khashoggi murder as a cudgel against President Trump's Saudi Arabia policy are the same people who supported Barack Obama's rapprochement with Iran? A region, listen to this, this is some truth that many would prefer you to ignore. A regime, Iran that is, that has killed thousands worldwide, including hundreds of Americans, and brutalizes its own people. Where was this echo chamber? Where were these avatars of human rights when Mr. Obama gave the mullahs pallets of cash to carry out their work as the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism? You can see why the charge, fake news, an enemy of the people, you can see why it resonates with so many. Saudi Arabia, like the U.S. and unlike these critics, recognizes the immense threat the Islamic Republic of Iran poses to the world. See, we know, you think about the insight that we're given into these developments because of Bible prophecy, Psalm 83 and the like. These two camps, you have the Saudi Arabian camp, and then you have the Iranian camp. And during the Obama years, the U.S. was firmly on the side of Iran, the king of the South. And President Trump has reversed that. And the media don't like it. They don't like it. So they hop on Khashoggi, even as they turn a blind eye to all of these other journalists murdered in Russia, in Iran, wherever. But Khashoggi's the one that they have to sound the alarm over. He says here, its objectives, speaking of Iran, are to spread the Islamic Revolution from Tehran to Damascus, to destroy Israel, and to subjugate anyone who refuses to submit, starting with the Iranian people. An emboldened Iran would spread even more death and destruction in the Middle East, spark a regional nuclear arms race, threaten trade routes, and foment terrorism around the world. He's talking about the king of the South, the prophesied king of the South. He explains how that one of the first acts of Muhammad bin Salman's as crown prince was to root out the destabilizing influence in Yemen, Iran's destabilizing influence. Well, he encourages readers to go back and look at some of the history of the past 30 years or so. I think going on 40 years now. But you read about Khashoggi and all that you're going to get in today's media. Cut ties with Saudi Arabia. The caravan. All leading up to the midterm elections. It's not an invasion. There's no danger. It's only women and children. And they're all seeking asylum. And then come Sunday, we find out that they were spectacularly wrong. And no apologies. Even when they have the footage right in front of them, even when they have the reporter on the scene, even when they have the border agent, still, they'll tell you that what you're seeing is not what you're seeing. Look at all the fuss over President Obama criticizing judges. And then you had the Chief Justice. I think this was last Friday, wasn't it? The Chief Justice comes out and rebukes President Trump for doing something that probably every single president in U.S. history has done, to criticize a court ruling, to criticize even a Supreme Court justice. In this case, it was President Trump criticizing the Ninth Circuit, which is where all the left-wing activists run to try to slow down the Trump administration's agenda, because they know they'll get a favorable ruling there. And that's what President Trump pointed out. Then John Roberts comes out and rebukes him publicly, and he said nothing. Just like Senator Grassley said, he said nothing when Barack Obama rebuked the court, in this case, the Supreme Court, Sam Alito. I forget what year that was. But you can't say it if you're President Trump, because, again, he's very much like Adolf Hitler. And so we really have to key in on anything and everything he says. If he criticizes a judge, then here comes the Supreme Court justice saying, look, all of us judges are, we're not biased. We're not politically motivated. Try telling that to the people who tried to destroy Brett Kavanaugh. Do you think those people thought it was important that we have a left-wing president appoint that judge as opposed to Donald Trump? They hate the idea of a Republican appointing a Supreme Court justice. And so they tried to destroy a man, to thwart the process, because they know how much politics play into this. You have that, you have the caravan, you have the Khashoggi killing. You have the never-ending Mueller investigation. Last night, Cindy Hyde-Smith, she wins the runoff in Mississippi. And look at what the Democrats were doing in the last couple of weeks, trying to destroy her, saying, as per usual, she's a racist. She's a racist. You hear Don Lemon the other night going on and on about how Mississippi, the state, the entire state, it's at its moments in history for sure. But now, today, 2018, the whole state is racist. It's still racist. It's always been racist. And then even last night, after, she wins anyway, even going up against all of these charges of racism. Listen to what this MSNBC anchor has to say, and she has a colleague that at least sets her straight at the end. But still, here's clip three.
I think what a lot of people wonder, not just coastal elites, but people from states other than Mississippi, how can people vote for someone who joked about public hangings, who went to a segregation academy, who I believe it's been reported her daughter did or does as well. And you already see, and I don't know that you can say there's a cause and effect, but yesterday two nooses were found hanging on two different trees at the state capitol.
Well, the nooses were put up in protest to highlight Cindy Hyde-Smith and her statement. So that was a protest move. I just want to be clear about
that.
So she joked about a public hanging. And she's a racist because of that. And then she wins the election. And then there's the host saying there's two nooses. I'm not sure. Can this be connected? At least the colleague sets her straight. But it's the same method of attack every single time. And meanwhile, in the real world, in Germany, in Europe, in Iran, in the Middle East. Remember what my father said. You can't truly understand the Holy Roman Empire unless you understand history and the Bible. History's being blotted out. That's what Richard Palmer said in his trumpet brief last night. It's being rewritten right before our eyes. And you have someone coming along in the Washington Post saying, well, Iran has never attacked. It's never threatened to attack Israel. And the reader's just supposed to carry on. Keep calm and carry on. Iran, they would only defend themselves, you understand. Israel, really, Israel's the bad guy. Okay, we'll clarify it, but the clarification is that Israel interprets these statements as threats. Nobody else really does. Nobody else in the West, certainly not us in the Washington Post offices. History's being rewritten, and there's an ignorance with respect to Bible prophecy. I mean, that goes without saying. And then look at all that does not get the attention that it should. Like my father said about the President Trump, Emmanuel Macron controversy. But not for President Trump's tweet. Again, you would have had the Western media elites just siding with Macron. Well, yeah, he's right. He's right to criticize President Trump. He's right, even at that ceremony. You look at all that's being ignored. There was a story in the Times just the other day. Beijing extending its reach 5,000 meters under disputed sea. They're building up the South China Sea. all of these islands, these artificial islands that they're propping up for military purposes. Now they're building an undersea base. The world's first deep sea underwater research facility in the South China Sea. It's going to be 5,000 meters below sea level. This is like something out of Hollywood. It says it is part of Beijing's ambition to tap ocean resources in addition to its quest to drill deep into the earth and explore space to give the country an edge in defense and energy. That's China. And then today in the Times of London, you have Japan. This carrier that was supposed to be for helicopters. Well, now it's turning out to be a massive aircraft carrier. Japan, the one with this constitution following World War II, that basically prevented it from making these kinds of advancements militarily. We're going to be a pacifist nation. This is a lesson that we've learned from World War II. Well, that's out the window. That constitution's gone. It's been ripped to shreds. And Japan sees what's happening in China, and so they're militarizing themselves, just as many of China's neighbors are. That's happening in the real world. Even in the midst of all this fake news that we see on TV, on websites, truth fails. No wonder you need thetrumpet.com to just get to the truth. It's Wednesday. We haven't even talked yet about Russia taking control of an area the size of Switzerland. That happened over the weekend as well. And as Politico even notes, and this again is a left-wing organization, but even Politico's pointing out how Putin is firmly in control of the situation in Crimea, obviously, but in Ukraine as well. Politico says by the time Western officials had figured out what and where the Kerch Strait was, the Russian leader had sewn up his naval operation, taking around 24 Ukrainian sailors prisoner, shooting and wounding at least 3 of them, and impounding their vessels. Not bad for a Sunday outing. That just happened on Sunday. No big deal. No big deal. It says, in case there were any lingering doubts over the efficacy of Western efforts to rein in Russia, Moscow's latest aggression made it pretty clear that the attempts to coax Vladimir Putin into de-escalating the confrontation with Ukraine have failed. They have failed. No degree of sanctions, German-led dialogue, or even genuflection has made much of an impression on the Russian leader. He's just doing what he wants. Where is this leading? Where's the military buildup in China and Japan leading? It says the fecklessness of Europe's response is remarkable, even by its admittedly modest standards. Quote some European officials saying, we honestly don't know what to do. It says here, Sunday's showdown wasn't random. It was the culmination of a years-long strategy to assert control over the Azov Sea, a process that the West largely ignored. Remember the high-level outrage over Russia's construction of a bridge over Kerch Strait, despite Ukrainian protests that it would further constrict trade and access to Mariupol, a regional hub in the east of the country? No. That might be because there was none. There was no outrage. Nobody talked about it. Jeremiah Jacques had a piece. We just put it at thetrumpet.com, I think, yesterday or today. He interviewed this reporter based in Kiev who basically said the same thing as Politico says. Look, all of this is going on and nobody's paying attention. Nobody cares. Nobody in Europe cares. Nobody in the United States cares. Well, Donald Trump at least has said something. He's come out with a strong condemnation of this. But you can't seem to get the media interested in it. They're too busy. They're too busy with caravans and Khashoggi and racism. Not racism in Europe, racism in America. Jeremiah says in his piece, he quotes from this or paraphrases this journalist in Kiev who said the most worrying aspect of the Russian aggression is that it is not something extremely out of the ordinary. And in fact, not even the most destructive recent display of Moscow's ongoing aggression in Ukraine. This is not out of the ordinary. This is customary. Russia's bossy behavior in the Kerch Strait did not result in any Ukrainian service members being killed in action, he said. Meanwhile, Ukraine has lost 12 service members on the front lines in Donbas. That's eastern Ukraine. And that's happened just in November. Just this month. Jeremiah writes, the point is a valid one. Since the conflict erupted in 2014, the violence between Ukraine and Russian-backed forces has killed more than 10,300 people and wounded more than 24,000. The impact on Ukraine's economy has also been toxic, but in recent years, most of this ongoing Russian violence against Ukraine, Revenet said, that's the Kiev journalist, has largely slipped under the radar of the Western media. The Western media really could care less. It doesn't care. Political, the same article that says, you know, this is going on and no one's paying attention, it says, meanwhile, over in the EU, cocoon, Germans debated, well, this is all going on in Ukraine, and then it leaves with this zinger at the end. In the EU cocoon, Germans debated whether the United Nations Refugee Compact would be legally binding, and the French squabbled over the price of gasoline, and the U.S. lost somewhere in Trump land. Lost somewhere in Trump land. And of course, the implication generally in those kinds of statements is that it's Donald Trump's fault, when in fact, he's the only one that were, well, it, because of his tweets, at least were made known of what Macron said and how much of an insult it was. He told the Washington Post regarding this aggression in Ukraine, I don't like it. I don't want that aggression at all. And then he said Europe shouldn't like it either. And Germany shouldn't like that aggression. He even threatened to cancel his upcoming meeting with Putin. We'll see if he does. I mean, he has reached out to Putin. And one could argue more so with this than with Khashoggi for sure, that there should be more distance between the U.S. and Russia. But look at the pass that they gave Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry. It's interesting that the president, he criticizes Germany for not doing more to confront Russia. And if you think back at the article my father wrote over the summer, the title is Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America. There may be a reason. There may be a reason why Germany hasn't done more. This is what my father said. I forget the month. It was this past summer. He says, then in 2014, Putin struck again. He's talking about Ukraine here. Russia annexed the Crimea from Ukraine and asserted control over the eastern part of the country. Germany once again said little and did nothing. This was especially suspicious given the fact that just before the incursion, Ukraine had been on track to join the EU. You would think Germany would have been extremely angry at Russia, but not if it had previously agreed that Russia could have control of Ukraine or part of it. Could it be, he says, could it be that Germany agreed to let Russia make those expansionist moves in exchange for Russia not interfering with Germany's conquest of the Balkans back in the 1990s? Well, see, here you've got to dig into a little bit of history. What happened? What about that German conquest of the Balkans in the 1990s? Or before that, what about the pact made between Germany and Russia in the late 1930s? You've got to be aware of this history. You've got to know a little bit of history about the Holy Roman Empire, for example. You've got to know a little bit about Bible prophecy, and then you know right where this is headed. Here today, we see Germany very, very quiet as Russia just helps itself to more of Ukraine, to more power in the far east of Europe. And again, if you want to focus in on U.S. presidencies, Donald Trump's, he's done more to back the Ukrainians than President Obama ever did. selling them offensive weapons, which Barack Obama repeatedly refused to do. He left Ukraine hanging. The Washington Post even noted this. Congress, this is from, I think, 2014. Congress, no, this is recently. Congress authorized such sales, these weapons, that is, in 2014 in the Ukraine Freedom Support Act, but the Obama administration never authorized large commercial or government sales, a move widely seen as a de facto decision not to provide lethal weapons to the Ukraine military. Obama didn't help them out. President Trump has tried to. And he's condemned what happened on the weekend. But now you look at some of the coverage today. If there is any Russian collusion, President Trump cozying up to Putin, that would be what you get from the echo chamber. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program after this hour-long show without any promos, we just got rolling and kept on going. You can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.